This is Chair Fields. Is the department on yet?
I have not been advised that he's on the phone just yet. Chair Fields.
Okay. Do you have a list of board members that are on yet?
Barbara Thompson is in the room with us. Vice Chair Hall's on the line. Colonel Toole and Van Meter are on the phone, and that's all I have for now.
John Harmon's on the line too.
Thank you, John.
Okay, I'm gonna mute mine. So just let me know when the commissioner gets there, and then I think we'll have enough to start.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, James. This is Rebecca, and just wanting you to know I'm here.
Okay, great. Thanks. We'll wait a minute or two until the commissioner gets there, then we'll start.
Okay, thanks.
Johnson is here.
Okay, are you guys ready?
I'm ready. I think.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll call the meeting to order at 9:01. And if we can get a roll call.
Member Gallahorn is excused. Dr. Hamilton. Second Vice Chair Harmon.
Present.
Member Hemshute.
Here.
First Vice Chair Hall.
Here.
Member Michael. Colonel Toole. Colonel Toole, are you on the line? Member Thompson?
Here.
And Chair Fields?
Here.
Mr. Chair, you have a quorum.
Okay, great. Thank you. If we can all stand wherever we're at and have the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag. The United States of America,
and the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you. If we can get an adoption of the agenda.
This is Member Harmon. I move that we adopt the agenda as presented.
Is Member Hemshute, I second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none, roll call, please.
Member Gallahorn has been excused. Dr. Hamilton? Second Vice Chair Harmon?
Yes.
Member Hemshute?
Yes.
First Vice Chair Hall?
Yes.
Member Michael? Colonel Toole?
Yes.
Member Thompson?
Yes.
Chair Fields?
Yes. Does anyone wish to change his or her vote at this time? Hearing none.
Mr. Chair, the motion passes to the adopted agenda as is.
Okay, great. Thank you. Next item is the disclosures of potential conflicts of interest. If any board members have any conflicts of interest in anything on the agenda, go ahead and voice that conflict at this time. Okay, hearing no potential conflicts of interest. Next is public comment time, 3 minutes for individuals and 5 minutes for groups. Do we have any people online for public comment?
At this time, I do not. Let me check the sheet here in the room. It does not appear we have any public comment, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Well, we'll go ahead and move on to the first agenda item in work session, which is Every Student Succeeds Act second draft. Commissioner Johnson.
All right. The board will receive an update of the department's progress in developing Alaska's state plan for the Every Student Succeeds Act and gathering stakeholder input. So I just want to make a few comments to start out, and then Margaret McKinnon's here, and we'll walk through some of the highlights of the plan. As we've indicated, today is just to introduce you to the second draft of the plan. We don't expect that you or our stakeholders have actually read through the second draft yet. So that's what we're asking is over the next few weeks that you take time to read through that plan carefully. Hopefully the overview that Margaret gives you today will help you read through that plan better informed. And then as you do, make notes, ask questions, and that's what we're asking of the stakeholders. We have been so fortunate with the input that we've received so far, and the team has worked really hard to evaluate that input against all the decisions we're making throughout the plan. So as we put something in the plan, Sandra, Margaret, and the entire team have been evaluating how that measures up against the input we've received, where it lines up, and where we may be recommending something different. So I think we've been very fortunate in Alaska with the amount of engagement and input that we've received, and it's helped make the plan a better plan. I'm very excited after reading through this second plan. I think we're in a really good spot. There's lots of decisions still that we need to make. Even as late as yesterday, the team was meeting in my office. We were discussing tweaks and changes that we will be making even as you're reading through this second draft. So this is truly a document that's evolving and changing and probably will right up until the time that we submit the plan. On August 1st, we'll be taking your questions, going through questions that we receive between now and then asking for you to endorse the plan as we then send it on to the governor for his review. In the law, it requires that the governor and the public get 30 days to review the plan. And so we'll have that 30 days. At the end of it, we'll evaluate feedback and incorporate what we can, and then we need to send it off to the feds by September 18th. So we have really tight turnarounds right now. And that's okay because we have benefited from the 16 plans that have already been submitted to the federal government. I've read through those plans, made lots of notes. I know the team has read through those plans, bits and pieces, and so we've benefited from that. We've benefited from some of the reviews of those plans. There are several resources out there where other foundations and organizations have reviewed the state plans that have been submitted, and so we've benefited from that. I just returned, when did I return?
Yesterday.
From South Dakota, meeting with all the other state chiefs and getting to interact with some of the state chiefs that already submitted their plan and some of their processes, and that's helped us also. So over the next couple weeks, what we would ask you and our stakeholders is that as you read through the plan and you come up to points that you have questions on or you want clarification, if you would email those to Sandra Meredith, her email is sandra.meredith@alaska.gov, and we'll make sure we send that out to as many people as possible. And then she will be collecting those questions, assigning them to staff so that we can make sure we have references in the law and those sorts of things when we answer your question. But it also will help all of you because then we will share those questions with everybody because maybe somebody asked a question that somebody else didn't think of, that will just give everybody a better understanding of this plan. Because what's exciting is we're at a point where people really will start engaging with the specifics of the plan at this point. Where as we get more and more specific, then people will have opinions and input that will help inform us as we move forward and help us know how to better communicate what we're doing. So emailing those questions to Sandra ahead of time will be very helpful to us, but also to you. Next Tuesday, the team has a webinar with, we've invited lots and lots of people to that webinar to go through the plan with them. basically in a similar way that we're doing with you, and we'll be asking them the same thing, to send us their questions and get their feedback so that you have the benefit of their questions and their feedback, and so do we. An executive summary that I really appreciate the staff thought of doing is going to be posted on the department's website by the end of the day today. And that executive summary will be a good tool for people to use that may not want to read through some of the technical jargon and references in the larger document. And I think people are going to find that very helpful. That is another document that we will continue to tweak and work on as we go through the process. One other thing that we're going to be doing over the next few months, even after the September 18th deadline, is trying to visualize as much of the plan as possible with helpful graphics and graphic design sorts of things, so that we can make this plan as clear to folks as possible. You know, sometimes with a plan like this, there's technical jargon, there's complexities in how you calculate things, and we just want to make sure everybody has a fair chance of understanding the plan and how it will impact and hopefully improve the education system in the state. So I think we're in a great spot. We're looking forward to it, and I'm going to turn it over to Margaret and let her walk through some of the plans and then take any reference questions that you may have. And then again, over the next few weeks, you read it. Before she does that, I just want to say welcome to Lieutenant Colonel Van Meter. I know he's not an official member of the board yet, but we're very thankful that he's willing to serve with us and help the students of Alaska. And then Lieutenant Colonel Toole has been a great benefit to this board and to me as I've taken the role as commissioner, and I certainly hope that I'll continue to have the benefit of his counsel even after he's not an official member of the board. So with that, Margaret.
Thank you. For the record, this is Margaret McKinnon, now with a new title, Federal Program Policy Coordinator, but still very much involved in the ESSA work. So I'd like to just highlight some of the key changes from the first draft of our plan to this new draft number two. And then, as Commissioner Johnson said, this list of changes will be included as part of the executive summary packet. So it'll help you find the appropriate sections and page numbers. The first section, most of these sections are under Title I, Part A, and the first section relates to standards and assessments. The plan template itself did not specifically ask any questions because that's not an area that they will be approving. This assessment system gets approved through a peer review process. But we did include a current description of where we are with our standards and assessments in that section of the plan so that all the stakeholders and public can see that. The next section there was an eighth grade math exception, and the first draft of the plan said, no, we are not doing that. That exception relates to allowing math students to who take algebra in the eighth grade to take an algebra end of course test. We don't have end of course tests yet, but basically we wrote the plan as if we would be considering those in the future. And you can see both of those, they begin on section pages 5 through 7. Moving into the accountability section, the first set of questions related to subgroups and then a minimum end size. And the minimum end size is the minimum number of students that needs to be included in the subgroup or even in the all students group for a school or that group to be included in the accountability system indicators. And in our first draft, we had not proposed a minimum end size, but in this draft, we're proposing a size of 10 as a minimum end. And that can be found on page 9. The next section relates to the long-term goals. And we need to have long-term goals in for academic achievement in English language arts and mathematics and graduation rates, and for English learners in making progress in learning English. So the revision from the first draft of the plan is in the section on the long-term goal for academic achievement. And originally we had proposed 75% as the long-term goal at the end of 10 years. And we've made a revision to that to have the goal be to reduce the percentage of students not proficient in half over 10 years from their starting point. And that was based on stakeholder feedback. It gives us a little bit more realistic annual increases in the measures of interim progress. That could be found on page 11. Then we move into the section on the actual indicators in the accountability system. And the first indicator is academic achievement. It starts at the bottom of page 16. The text is on page 17. And this is the measurement of the performance of students in reading, language arts, and mathematics assessments. So the change is that we put a chart in this section showing the points that would be earned for those indicators. And we've proposed earning points based on the percentage of students that have attained proficient or higher on the assessment. And then there's an additional idea for adding points for the subgroups in the school who are meeting their measures of interim progress or making progress on those, reaching those long-term goals. The other academic indicator, which is required for schools that are not high schools, originally we had proposed potentially using, we had proposed measures of subgroups making progress, and we'd also proposed an idea of using student performance on district-selected interim assessments based on stakeholder feedback and questions about how those assessments would be comparable across the state. We removed that idea, and we've included the growth measure similar to the one that we had used before. So we would use a value table approach and measure students' movement within the achievement level ranges. So as you know, we have advanced, proficient, below proficient, and far below proficient, and then we would divide those into subcategories like far below proficient plus or minus, and then we can measure movement and growth and allocate points for that. And that section is on page 18 through 20. The graduation rate indicator, there's not a substantial change in terms of using both the four-year cohort and five-year cohort allocating, but we've included the chart that shows the allocation of points. We need to have more emphasis on the four-year rate than the five-year rate. But we've also added the additional points or bonus points idea in the graduation rate indicator in order to capture the student subgroup progress on their graduation rates. In the school quality and student success indicator section, in the first draft, we had just kind of listed some ideas that we were considering but didn't include any specifically proposed. In this draft, we are including three indicators for both grade spans. So one grade span would be grades K through 8, and the other grade span would be 9 through 12. And so in this draft, we would allocate points across the three types of school quality or student success indicators. For schools that have students grades K through 8, we would include chronic absenteeism. And this measure, yes, the page number is page 23 to 25. This measure will have data is already being required to be reported for this measure, so it will not be an additional data collection. And there has been research that does show there's a correlation with higher rates of academic achievement in schools that have lower rates of chronic absenteeism. Another school quality and student success indicator proposed for elementary grades would be student participation in district-selected interim assessment. So basically, this is an incentive to ask districts to use this as a method to monitor their students' progress during the year with the opportunity to change and improve the instruction and provide interventions to students that need it within the school year. And then the third component for grades 3 through K through 8 would be a grade 3 literacy component, which would count for 2 points. And this is a measure of the percentage of students in grade 3 that have reached proficiency on the assessment. So that score is included within the all school measure in the academic achievement indicator, but this then highlights it as a really important goal to reach so that kids can read by the end of, by third grade. So there are additional points as a school quality and student success indicator. Now if we move to schools with students in grades 9 through 12, we have three proposed indicators for the school quality and student success. In this category, we would include chronic absenteeism as well for this grade band. Then we would look at freshman on-track credit accumulation. It's important to understand that this particular element would require a new element for data collection in Summer Oasis. And it would be based on the percentage of first-time ninth graders who earn at least a quarter of their required credits by the end of their first year in high school. And again, there's research that shows students who are on track by the end of their freshman year are much less likely to drop out of high school. So that would be an incentive to ensure that students are getting support in the ninth grade. And then the third school quality and student success indicator would be Alaska Performance Scholarship eligibility. And this is data that's already reported to the department for students to qualify for this scholarship. And so that would provide an incentive for districts to continue or expand their course offerings and access to college or career-ready assessments that would qualify students for those scholarships. The next section is the annual meaningful differentiation section, which starts at the bottom of page, starts on page 26, goes 26 to 28. And this is the section that where we describe the index. And in the first draft, we proposed an index of 100 points, but we proposed starting with 100 points and then subtracting if you didn't earn all the points at a particular for a particular indicator. And there was significant stakeholder feedback that said we'd rather have a positive point system. So we proposed 100 points where you would earn points for each level. And we've also proposed giving every score an overall, every school an overall score between 0 to 100 based on this index, and then recognizing each school with a designation. There was some feedback that people were not interested in an A through F system. The stars we've used in the past, and there were some positive comments about stars, and still some folks were not appreciative of that. So we're proposing designations of superior performance, satisfactory performance, needs improvement, which would be three categories that all schools could fall into, and then some schools will be identified for targeted support or comprehensive support, according to the requirements under ESSA. So that idea is presented on page 26. And then on page 27, we talk about the weighting of the elements. And there's a chart there that basically shows out of 100 points, the points that would be possible for students, schools with students in grades K through 8 and schools with students in grades 9 through 12. And you'll see that the growth measure is not measured for students in grades 9 through 12, and the graduation rate measure, of course, is not measured under grades K through 8, but each has a possible total of 100 points. And clarifying that we would use a similar idea that we used under our previous accountability system of weighting the points proportionately for schools that have a mixture of grade bands. So a K through 12 school or even a 7 through 12 school, we would apply the indicators to the students in the appropriate grade span and then apportion them for an overall rating. So that's something that we've done in the past and people will probably be familiar with. And then we've added some ideas for how to include other schools, all schools, in the annual meaningful differentiation system. Schools with no tested grades, alternative schools, schools with special populations. So that information is on page 28. So the next section is identification of schools. And basically, this section has been elaborated a little bit in terms of specifying additional considerations that would be included in the designation for comprehensive support and improvement and targeted support. And we've also spelled out the criteria for the additional categories of schools. And as you know, our state law requires a category of recognition, so the superior performance could be that recognition category. And in the school and district improvement, the support and improvement section, there haven't been significant changes, but just additional emphasis and graphics to emphasize continuous improvement and ongoing engagement of the department staff and stakeholders with districts and schools, and includes some graphics and tests that highlight the district role in targeting efforts on improving student outcomes, and including continuous support through federal programs monitoring and focus on better coordination of support across diverse programs and resources. So that is the section on district and school support and improvement, and that would be on page 31 to 37. And Title I, Part A, the section on educators, it starts on page 37. This section focuses on how to improve our disproportionate rates of access to educators with schools that have large populations of low-income or minority students. So in this section, we've revised the definitions for clarity. There's the definition of ineffective teacher, and we have removed teacher absenteeism from that definition. Clarified that in order to be an ineffective teacher, they have to be on a plan of improvement or professional growth that was based on their evaluation. And we've listed some measures that we're using to calculate the disproportionate rates of access to educators, and clarify that public reporting will only be on the professional qualifications required in state and district report cards, which is essentially reporting the number and percentage of inexperienced teachers, principals, school leaders, and out-of-field teachers. And also try to clarify that the state approach to addressing disproportionality is multi-phase. It's not something that we can accomplish all in one year, and we'll definitely be working with districts on those sections. In Title II, Part A, so the other programs in Title I have less significant changes from the first draft to the second draft. In Title II, Part A, starts on page 56. There's a discussion of how we're supporting effective instruction. And we're in the use of funds section. We're focusing, and this would be the state funding that we receive for this as part of the Title IIA grant. We want to focus on educator growth and the development of systems. Some continuing activities are listed, including personalized learning, earning micro-credentials, and professional development, professional learning standards. Some ideas that are under consideration include induction initiatives, teacher leader programs, principal and other school leader support, and teacher and leader academies. So again, those aren't finally determined, but the idea is that we'll continue to work on those and work with stakeholders. And also high quality and cohesive professional development initiatives informed by the Alaska Education Challenge. And use of funds to improve equitable access to teachers, there's, which goes back to the work that we just talked about in Title I, we included a map highlighting some districts that are involved in Phase II work. And in the description, system of certification and licensing, we describe current and future efforts to reduce barriers, and it considers revisiting alternate routes to certification in the future. And improving skills of educators, and this is all page 59 through 61, requesting districts' practices on how they're improving the skills and sharing those that are culturally relevant, and outlining available offerings that can help teachers serve diverse groups of students. So that's the highlights of the changes. And as the Commissioner said, there will be a document that will help walk you through these highlights of what's in the second draft and where the changes have occurred.
Chair Field, this is Member Thompson. I have a couple of follow-up questions.
Sounds good. Go ahead.
Okay. With regard to the end size, 10 is the number we've used in the past. Is that correct?
So in the earlier days, under MCLD, we had two different end sizes at first, and then we settled on 25 for AYP.
Okay.
When we went to the waiver, we had 5 or 6, depending on whether you were looking at AMO targets or within the growth and proficiency index.
Okay.
So our most recent end size was pretty small, very small.
But you think the end size of 10 is doable and will capture the most data that we can capture on?
Yeah, so with an end size of 10, and there's some, let me find the page. There would be, one of the differences between ESSA and No Child Left Behind is that ESSA requires the all students group to meet the end size in order to be reported in the accountability system. So we were reporting AYP for schools with 4 or 5 kids tested, mostly at the all students group. But here we need to include all schools. So this is the balance on including as many schools as we can and still having a number that isn't as impacted by a change in one student from year to year. So the plan says approximately 87% of the schools would be included with a minimum end size of 10. If we, but higher than that, we have more schools not included. So,
okay, that's good. On page 17, there's a line in the first paragraph about, while the long-term goal for all students by 2016-2017 is expected to be about 66%. Can you speak to that goal just a little bit?
The targets are in, let me just check the targets.
Sure.
Okay. On page 78, you see the goal at the state level for all students and all the subgroups. And so, starting from, and again, these are estimated data because we still have not had our actual calculation of peak data yet. But if you go from the baseline of 2016-17 to 2026-27, you'll see that many of those groups are at about 66%. So it's not exactly. And it also may be that that may not have gotten edited in the second draft.
Oh, okay.
So, but that, I think, was what the thought was there, is that by the time you reach that, many of the groups will be, the all students group will be at about 66%.
Okay, all students in the state.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it just seemed, when I saw it, it just seemed low for some groups, and I didn't want anyone to think we were just kind of moving the bar down, but it may just be in the way that it's explained.
I'll mark that as clarification.
And I'm glad about the growth emphasis. That I like that. And one question, and it may not, nobody may be able to answer at this point, but we're using the Alaska Performance Scholarship as one of the indicators. Do we have a field on the future of that particular program, and are we building in something that's sustainable, or is that, you know, yeah, that's my question.
No, you know, there was legislative talk this year of doing away or changing that program. I, as I've read other state plans and listened to other folks around the country, access to high-level courses is a strong indicator of, you know, the quality of a school, the success of students there. So I think it's worth putting in there. The law only requires us to have one element in school quality and success. We're including three, which is more than we're required, which, you know, will probably generate some feedback. But the reason we want to do that is we want to figure out which one is the right one for Alaska. And we don't pretend to know that today. I'm not excited about chronic absenteeism in our plan because I think that there's a dynamic in Alaska that you know, makes that interesting. But I think it's really, really important that we get that data and evaluate it because it will tell us something. So will, even if they something happened to the Alaska Performance Scholarship Program, we would still be fine because we have more in the plan than the bare minimum.
Okay.
But I think what we have in there are really good indicators that it's going to provide Alaskans with some really important data about what's happening in our schools out there that we don't currently have. We hopefully, you know, most of it is data that districts already collect in some form or another, and so we're hoping that it doesn't add too much, but I think it's important and it'll be better for our students.
Okay, so we have options because we've added more than the requisite number of of indicators, and so if that program somehow goes away, which I hope it doesn't, we have options.
Well, and, you know, I'll give credit to the team. You know, the brilliance of putting it in the plan is I think policymakers that are going to make a decision in the future about that program are going to have a lot more information about that program because we put it in our SMA. And their decision will be much better informed. So hopefully they'll give it time to get that data. And that credit goes to your staff for that. They thought of that.
Yay, staff. Chair Field, I'm finished with my questions. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Any other board members with questions, comments?
This is Board Member Hull.
Okay, go ahead.
I have a couple of technical, you know, kind of down in the weeds questions, and then a couple of more general ones. Like Barbara, I like the growth element, continuous improvement is, I think, necessary for us. But I'm also like her, well, actually, like the commissioner was just saying, I like the notion that chronic absenteeism is included in the plan, but I think it is, as the commissioner said, that's an issue that's a particular challenge for us. So both that and freshman on-track credit accumulation are issues. And I think that, you know, the research is clear enough that it makes a difference that we should put in our plan. But here's my question. Will there be technical support for how to impact that? I worry that with regard to freshman on-track credit accumulation, that it would lead to just grade inflation, and we need less of that in our state, not more of it. So how will we support districts in ensuring that that doesn't just lead to grade inflation?
Well, I'll take a stab at that first, and then if Margaret or somebody else wants to jump in. So I'll start with chronic absenteeism and just say, agree with you, as I stated before. I think there's some thought that we could really put into chronic absenteeism in the state that may turn into a great benefit for the students. For example, you know, if you're a student in rural Alaska and you play activities, you're absent technically from school a lot. But if a district implemented measures where that student could continue to receive instruction even while they travel, either through video conferencing, online, or whatever, then if we can use chronic absenteeism to incentivize that kind of implementation of a program by districts, then I think that will benefit many, many students in this state that currently play activities and are gone from the classroom a lot. So though I have expressed strong concerns and the staff has spent a lot of time educating me and helping me think through that, I think that putting it in the plan, collecting the data, and then really rolling up our sleeves and figuring out how we can address a unique issue in Alaska in terms of students traveling, those sorts of things, I think could turn into a good thing. And I say that because I have a lot of confidence in the staff here in taking that data and looking at it. In terms of a freshman on track, you know, some of the questions you asked, Vice Chair Hull, are questions that, I mean, that's just the tip of the iceberg of dispositioning the department toward the plan that is approved by the federal government and shifting the focuses that maybe we've had the last decade or so for No Child Left Behind and shifting them toward the kind of vision that we have put in the ESSA plan. And so that's one of those questions. What kind of technical and practical support will we provide for districts? What will that look like? What resources will we have in the state? As you know, the federal government, I just got an email this morning about, you know, the cuts that were approved in the subcommittee in the U.S. House yesterday, and, you know, that could impact some of Deed's capacity here. And so how will we disposition ourselves? Those are going to be ongoing questions, but I think your question is helpful in that it helps steer us to where we need to apply our resources. And so as we finalize the plan and we communicate that vision, we get more input from stakeholders, we will be working on how to implement that from a very high level down to a very technical level. And I'm sitting here in the room, and Teacher of the Year, Amy Jo Miners, is in the room, and she's already engaged us with some ways that we can take the plan, make it visualize some of the components and work with people to make it something that's applicable and that we can implement. So I think we're going to get a lot of help from stakeholders on that too. Margaret, do you want to add to that?
I mean, I think those are really good points. One possibility that could help with the freshmen and the courses might be going to the end of course exams, end of course tests in high school that would help focus kids on particular content. So that's the only other thing I have to add on that one.
Well, thank you. I agree with what you just said about the end of course exam. I mean, we we should be focusing on credits toward graduation, particularly for freshmen, because I've seen that over the years at our high schools. We all know it. I just want to be sure that we don't end up with having this indicator drive people to do things that really don't benefit kids. So I just want to call attention to the need for technical support in order to prevent that. My other kind of technical question is, you know, our state system of support, in my view, okay, so this is just my personal perspective perhaps, but in my view, the system of support has been focused on the most transient element of the system, coaching and mentoring teachers that are likely to leave, you know, that are there at their most inexperienced point in their career, and then they're looking for an opportunity to move closer to larger population centers. And so I'm wondering how in the plan we're addressing the need to go around the transients to get at who's going to be there long term and really improving student performance beyond just improving performance of inexperienced teachers that are likely to move. Sorry, a little redundant, but what are we doing to focus less on that transient element?
We're calling Brad Billings up to answer that. And as he's coming up, I'll just kind of circle back to the technical help that you brought up. I appreciate you bringing that up. Even yesterday, as we, as a team, were sitting around the table, our minds are very much on our school districts and our schools who are in an environment of having to do, you know, to squeeze their budgets, to make adjustments because there's not been increases, their costs are increasing, and so we want to make sure that the department is able to stand in the gap for our school districts and our schools when there are parts of this plan that require more data collection. And there, the law itself, and this has been communicated widely around the country, I don't know how much Alaskans have heard it, but the law itself increases the data collection burden on local schools and districts. That's written into the law. The civil rights data collection has some new elements and those sorts of things. So our districts and our schools are on our mind as we discuss all the elements of this plan. And so I appreciate that the board also is bringing up that need, because that'll be something that we have to address. That'll be something that we all have to speak with the legislature about and make sure we're supporting our districts. I'm excited about the data. I think it's going to be very good for Alaskan students. We just want to be mindful of the impact. Okay, Brad?
Brad Billings, the administrator of school improvement and support. Member Hull, the response I would say is I would point you first to then Section E of the plan itself, and that's technical assistance. I think the state system of support, one of the programs of that system are the coaches that you're referring to. But there's a number of other supports that are available not only to those low-performing schools, but other schools across the state. And so that Section E does a good job of laying out, that Section E on page 34, laying out the other broad supports that are in place that aren't necessarily targeted toward an individual person, but rather a program or a system. One thing that we've worked hard over the last 3 years to do with our state system of support coaches is have them be focused on systems change rather than necessarily coaching or people support. And so that's a consideration, I think, that gives us this concern that you correctly identified.
Thanks, Brad. Okay, I now have two more general questions. In your discussions, Commissioner, with other chief state school officers, what stands out in your mind related to their changes from previous plans and that might help our students, that might help us make more progress? What stands out in the other state plans that you've looked at?
So, you know, I have some favorites that I've read that I won't name, but they the growth measure, you know, is something that's been emphasized in several of the state plans, and really emphasizing how that plays out in the accountability system. It's been interesting to look at how some of the other states respond when schools are in need. So, you know, if different states have, you know, several states use letter grades, all sorts of things like that. We're trying to stay away from that based on input we've received. But when they do have a comprehensive school or a targeted support school, the kinds of things they do to support those schools, I've been impressed with some of the creative thinking out there, councils they formed, they bring in other people, those sorts of things. I think it one of the interesting things I heard just this last week or so when I was with other chiefs is especially some of the states that have now submitted their plan and gotten feedback from the federal government, and folks in their state have kind of perked up in terms of, okay, here is the plan, which, you know, just naturally happens. Once you complete the plan, then you're going to hear from voices that you may have not heard as you're developing it. But, you know, like I was in one meeting and one chief said, you know, even though we've tried to communicate it, once you submit your plan, then people start realizing that there's a lot in ESSA that's not that much different from No Child Left Behind. And so as they work through now moving into the implementation stage, it's addressing people's, you know, they've heard on the news, they've heard kind of some of the soaring rhetoric about how ESSA is, you know, is new and changes everything, and it really doesn't change everything. The accountability system, there's a lot of similarities to No Child Left Behind. There's several things that have been taken out that are good. We're glad they're not there. But the when I mentioned graphic design and adding those things to the plan, that's another thing that just hearing the communication strategy from other states on bringing along as many people as possible with the plan, making it clear, communicating it clearly, you know, correcting any assumptions that may people have had going into the plan and bringing them on board. That's some of the things that I've noticed.
Thanks very much. My other kind of big picture question is, what changes most reflect the new directions set by the board's priorities and the discussions that we're having with the Alaska Challenge? You know, what are the things that are reflected here that we've begun, you know, shifting our direction to improve student performance?
Well, I'll take a stab at that one. The five priorities that the board laid out, student learning, I mean, obviously, the whole growth mentality and having students learn more, you know, the five essential questions, that I think that's reflected in the plan. And I'm answering this at a very high level. You know, I'm not going to promise we're going to be able to do that in the next month, but I think it'd be great to go through the plan at some point, like where there's intersection with AK Challenge. The other would be the modernization and addressing, you know, there's a few statements in there about how technology can address some of the needs. And so that's another one. The whole community and tribal ownership, there's some statements in there that tie directly to the broader vision of that one as, you know, as each local district will start developing their own plan, but whereas a lot of No Child Left Behind was geared toward responding to districts, ESSA really is focused on responding to individual schools, and so there's some local control kind of issues there. You heard Margaret talk about educator development. That obviously hits one of the state board's five priorities. That's just a very high level. I think we could go through and specifically point to some places where in some of our team meetings we've noted something in AK Challenge and it's turned into a sentence in the ESSA plan. I think there's a couple places where AK challenge was specifically mentioned. I'm not sure I'm going to keep that in there because I think Alaska's Education Challenge is a strategic planning process implemented by the board. It's not necessarily the process will change and adapt as the board finalizes this first section of it. And so referencing the board's strategic plan maybe in a more generic way or whatever, but right now even those words are in the plan. So did that answer your question?
Well, yeah, let me do a little follow-up. I agree with you about the referencing to the Alaska Challenge, but I think the crosswalk is necessary, and I think you know that, and I think I suppose that you're probably working in that direction. I just want to call it to our attention that having the crosswalk, how does this plan reflect our strategic vision and where we're going and, you know, eventually with the outcome of the Alaska Challenge, that crosswalk is necessary for the alignment or we won't be able to accomplish anything. We really need to have this plan reflect the overall strategic direction because then in its implementation we'll be able to accomplish our goal. So let me follow up with just maybe a little more technical question. So will we be able to use resources that come from the feds to take action that results from the Alaska Education Challenge? Is the plan written in such a way to allow that, I guess is my question.
I'm going to ask Margaret to answer, but before I do, I'll say you're exactly right about the crosswalk. And the reason we have to do that is because I want to have integrity of what I've been saying to Alaskans since the very beginning of AK Challenge, and that is I want our ESSA plan to reflect our vision in this state, and that's Alaska's Education Challenge. I don't want AK Challenge to reflect ESSA vision. I want it to be the other way around, but yet they're going to work very well together. And that was one reason as I read through the second draft and saw where many of our conversations had been turned into sentences and paragraphs in the plan, I just got more and more excited about what we will be able to accomplish. And again, just think the staff has done a good job of reflecting that vision. So absolutely. When I say we won't get the crosswalk done immediately, that's because the feds are not interested in that, and I've got to get what we have to submit on the 18th, and I want to do it in a way that has as much input from stakeholders as possible, so that's consuming a lot of time. The documentation and showing the crosswalk, we will get there because I want that integrity to be there both for our ESSA plan and for AK Challenge, so I appreciate that. I'll let Margaret answer. I think generally the answer is yes, and the answer is yes because ESSA reflects the vision that we've set out in AK Challenge. Margaret, if you want to answer more specifically.
No, really, that's really all I needed. Margaret, if you want to add more. But I really wasn't looking technically about which dollars could be used. But just that notion of I hear you about not having the crosswalk yet. We don't have recommendations yet from the Alaska Challenge. But I just think the plan can and should be written in a way that reflects here's where we want to go and write this plan to allow that to happen. You know, here's the broad vision. The specific technical recommendations haven't come out yet, but this plan will allow us to take those technical recommendations and move forward. So that's really what was at the heart of my question. But Margaret, go ahead if you had something more specific.
Member Hall, I will just add that in all of our thinking about what goes into this plan, we were mindful of the five strategic priorities of the board. So I think as you read the text, you will see that, okay, this was chosen and this will help to amplify student learning or ensure an excellent education for all students. And as you mentioned, the federal programs funds that are, some are very specific to certain types of activities, but you'll see in these sections of the plan, especially Title IIA and those that have some flexibility in them for how we can support, you'll see indicators of that, I think, in this plan.
Thanks very much. That's the end of my questions, James.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, and I would just share Fields. I would say there's, I mean, just looking at it quickly, even the indicators, the safety and well-being portion of the Alaska challenge, the chronic absenteeism has come up several times, and so that's definitely crossing a potential recommendation. Reading by third grade, another one that an indicator, I've heard that. So I think there's things in here that are going to line up probably, even though we don't have the actual recommendations yet, there's definitely signs of it throughout the draft that I've seen. So that's just my comments on how much crosswalk there is or how much is in there. So any other members with questions, comments?
Member Hamilton?
Go ahead.
But thank you. Great job, everybody. It's been fun to watch the process and progress. Two questions that I have, and probably the commissioner's best to answer, and I think I've already heard this, I'm just reaffirming that we don't anticipate any barriers to meeting all of the deadlines imposed by the federal government to have everything rolled out. I know we've got our meeting scheduled and deadlines set. Is there any barriers that I'm just not aware of?
The survival of my staff is the only barrier, and I'm doing everything I can to keep them well fed and watered because they have been absolutely incredible up to this point, so I just want to keep them healthy and well.
Great. My second question is, I know that when I've completed a major task, a large project, a dissertation for your doctorate, when you're done doing that, and you feel like your draft is done, you just sit back, you feel just so good because it's all what you wanted it to be, it's your baby, you've built it, you've delivered it, and you're just kind of sitting back in the easy chair saying, I'm grateful that we've done just really, really good work on this. So this is a hard question to ask a couple of you there on the team, but now that it's drafted and it's sitting there waiting for the next input of stakeholders and ourselves, how are you feeling about the overall plan? Are you feeling like, yeah, we're just there because we had to, all the way to we're just euphoric and we're hitting Hawaii as soon as the deadline passes?
I'll let Margaret and Paul answer this one.
So this is Margaret while Paul is coming to the table. But, I think we are in a really good place for this second draft. There's been a lot of work, a lot of stakeholder input, and I believe we are coming together. I'm looking for an easy chair, but I have other things that are on my plate too in terms of continuing to improve this plan before it's actually submitted. But that's how I feel at this point.
And this is Paul Frusting, and I would say, when we completed the No Child Left Behind application, it was like 800 some pages long, and it was a monumental lift, and everyone had a sigh of relief for about 2 weeks. Then we had to start doing everything that we said in the application. So even though I think we're in a really great spot with this plan, as soon as we submit it, we have to look forward to the peer review, get those comments back, and the process is just really beginning. So the easy chair is, Margaret has 40-some years, and her easy chair is going to be retirement here. Trying to keep her happy and here is the most important thing in my life right now. But the easy chair is still a long ways out. We still have a lot of work to do. It'll be a great relief getting it submitted, but it'll be short-lived. We'll have to move on.
And then I'm going to let the Deputy Commissioner speak, and then I'll finish up. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Sana. I just wanted to share a couple of things from working closely with this team. And my role in this has more been a cheerleader to try and encourage them and keep them going, which is really not necessarily because they are so self-motivated and so concerned about the students in Alaska that I don't envision anyone here really going, wow, I'm going to go rest on my laurels for very long. But I do hope that each one will pat themselves on the back for a job well done as we continue to bring this to the finish line. And in all the meetings, all the conversations, they are so focused on what is best for the students in Alaska, how can we achieve the goals set before us, and constantly bringing that back to the table and focusing on that. So I know that the one piece that will be nice is to say, all right, this is done. And the commissioner, he kind of spoke a little bit about where this will take us. We're trying to draft this plan to help move the vision from the board, from the state board, into what our state will look like with the education system here, and craft that in a way so that staff can get working on that and actually focusing on what this looks like to make a difference for students. So I think it's not more of a resting, but it's an excitement that's building that, wow, yay, we're going to have this done, and now we start on the work, as Paul said, of implementing all this and seeing the difference that it's going to make.
And I'll just conclude by saying, you know, this is integrated in a whole lot of other things that are happening at the department that, you know, most folks aren't seeing, like the reorganization that I've talked to the board about. We're trying to make it all fit together very well to compose one big picture of more and more student learning in the state. And I think that's what excites the staff, is that they're very eager to get past the tediousness of writing the plan to the excitement of actually implementing it and working with our districts and schools to support student learning. And, you know, evidence of that is yesterday, you know, after you had the second draft, the staff was meeting yesterday talking about tweaking the draft and working on the third version of it. So it wasn't, you know, they weren't sitting around taking a day or two off because we had the board meeting today. They were already working yesterday. So I think we're in a good spot with the people we have assigned to it. But that's a great question. Thank you.
James, this is Rebecca. Can I just ask a couple quick questions?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. There are still some TBDs on this draft. Are those? Can we submit it with TBD, or are those things that are going to be filled in the next month or two?
Member Himshit, we expect to have those filled in within the next month or two. If that doesn't happen, then we can submit it and then submit another version as they're going through peer review. But our expectation is that we'll have the data and we'll be able to run it and fill that in.
Okay. And then I'm going to put on my science teacher hat a little bit. I know that one state submitted their accountability measures to include science, and I think that was rejected by the department. Do you know why, and is that something that we could consider? I mean, since it's been rejected for one state, it seems like we shouldn't bother, but I'm very interested in having science included in our accountability. Can you guide me to why we would not do that?
Member Himshut, at this point, we are still measuring our science standards and grade level expectations and have not yet revised the science standards. So we were thinking that we would hold off on the possible inclusion of science, considering that until some point in the future.
But it is on the radar. As we've already been having discussions about, you know, starting the review of science standards, that sort of thing. So it's on the radar. It doesn't mean that it won't ever be part of our system, but, you know, just in terms of all that we're trying to get done, there's a lot of work that needs to be done around our science standards and assessment before it would warrant or, you know, that it would be of a quality to include in the plan at this point. And to make that happen by, you know, the 18th and get it implemented, it just wasn't possible.
Right. I saw the intent to do the science standards in the 2017-18 school year, and I'm really excited about that. I think that's it's definitely time to do it. But and then my last question is, the teacher leadership information on page 57 is incredibly exciting to me. Is that if we put it in the plan, it's not something that we currently have in the state of Alaska, so that's our commitment to trying to create a mechanism for teacher leadership in the state?
I'm going to ask Celia to answer that question, but I think the short answer is yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am.
This is Cecilia Miller for the record. We are really lucky in our state. Bob Williams, our new director, education and school excellence is a big leader in the teacher leader standards. There's actually standards for teacher leaders. And so we see that as a mechanism to help districts become familiar with them and see how they might be able to be used in their districts.
So Cecilia, are you looking at things like Iowa's teacher leadership program that they have? I mean, there are models out there we could look at. And I just want to point you and Bob, and if you haven't seen it, the American Association of Physics Teachers just released a report that drew from the teacher leader model standards, and it's far more readable and useful in my mind than the standards that are housed on the NEA site. The model standards from 2010 are great, but they're not as readable as this new report from the physics teachers. So if you haven't had a chance to look at that, as a teacher, I found it very, very useful, and it might help on this section of the plan.
Great. Thanks. We'll definitely look for the resources that you have for us and what other states are doing as we move forward.
And back to Vice Chair Hull's question earlier about what I saw in the other plans, several of the, if not most of the other plans that have already been submitted contain some pretty robust teacher leader elements in that section of the plans, and so I think there's lots of examples to look at, and even a couple of those are in other states with significant rural areas and how they're going to address that in some of their more remote sites. So I think we have a lot of material to learn from as we think about how that can work in Alaska as we work with stakeholders up here too.
And I'd like to just add, Cecilia, you and I should have a conversation at some point. I've been spending quite a bit of time on teacher leadership in the last couple of months, and I'd love to talk more about what this could look like down the road. So let's have a phone call soon. Thanks.
This is Barbara. Just to follow up a little bit with what Rebecca said, when you have underlined teacher leader model standards, are those the ones came out of ECS, or are they something else?
You know, I would feel uncomfortable making claiming that. I'd rather have Bob and make sure to double check on that research. So I'm pretty sure that the ECS, they've been evolving in different, so I'm not sure exactly which ones he was referring to.
Ironically, it's a teacher leader conference right now.
Yeah. Okay. There is a reference in the plan for you to follow for the ones we're recommending.
Okay. Thank you.
Chair Fields, this is Member Hull. I have one follow-up question.
Hey, go ahead.
Okay. I probably have already exhausted my time, so I'll try and keep this short. But with Rebecca's reference to the updating of the science standards, I'm hopeful that we will have the opportunity to look overall at our expectations for students, you know, the notion of future ready and what are the things that kids really need to be able to know and do for the future. And so the plan is flexible enough for us to take another look at that as well, not just adding science into English and math, right?
That is absolutely correct.
Okay, thanks.
Any other comments or questions from board members? Okay, I'm seeing you're probably going to do this, but are you planning on compiling the list of questions, comments that you get on the draft? Because I'd be curious to see that, as long as it wasn't 1,000 questions and comments. But is that something you guys are planning on doing?
Right. So especially among the board, if you would submit your questions to Sandra, rather than wait and ask them all on August 1st, if you'll submit them as you read through the plan up till then we, at that August 1st meeting, will share with the entire board those questions that we received. We'll continue the process that we've used with stakeholder input, and so when we have the webinar next Tuesday, I'm sure we'll get some feedback, and then ongoing after that, Aaron's done a great job of working with that group to, and we've expanded it now to include even more people. And we'll be taking their feedback, and then, you know, as Margaret kind of walked through today, showing where we make adjustments in the plan and keeping track of that and keeping the board informed really all the way up until it's submitted, because you know, with the timelines we have and wanting to have the opportunity to have as much feedback as possible, we will keep evaluating that and incorporating that in the plan. And, you know, while I'm speaking of that, the other thing that the board should keep in mind is you have another significant opportunity to exercise your authority as board members when you approve regulations that go along with this plan. And so once the plan is finalized and then we start proposing regulations to go along with it, those have to be approved by the full board. And so that's another opportunity to get feedback from people. It's another opportunity for you to think through the plan, the implementation of it, and applying your vision. And so that, you know, that just because the plan is submitted on September 18th doesn't mean that the board's opportunity to influence the ESSA plan is done. So that, you know, that'll be ongoing for some time.
Okay, thank you. If there's no other questions or comments, we can move on. I'll give last chance. Okay, thank you for your presentation and all your hard work, and we'll move on to the next step of the draft. The next item is regulations to adopt 2A cut scores, peaks, and dynamic learning maps. Commissioner?
All right, the board is being asked to adopt regulations related to assessments and achievement level scores on the performance evaluation for Alaska's schools assessment in English, language, arts, and math, and for the alternative assessment in science. This was discussed with you at our last meeting, and so Margaret's going to walk you through this.
Thank you, Chair Fields, members of the board. What you have in your packet is primarily the same as it was from the previous meeting in terms of the process that was used to select the score ranges and the impact data. You will also see public comment, and in reviewing all of the public comments, it was positive for the changes that we were proposing. And it was positive for the change in the grade levels in high school. So the proposed change reads to administer the standards-based test in English, language, arts, and mathematics annually to every student in grades 3 through 8 and at least once in grades 9 through 12. The intention being that we can shift to testing only one grade in high school and or move to end-of-course tests in the future. In conversations with our attorney, we've proposed a slight amendment to that language to clarify with the intent that it becomes clear that the commissioner determines the grade that those tests are administered in high school, basically to align with the commissioner's role in selecting the standards-based test, which is the first sentence of the regulation. So you've received a revised version of the regulation packet. So for the record, I can read the sentence that was underlined now reads, except for students eligible for an alternate assessment under 4AAC 06.775B, each district shall administer the standards-based test in English, language, arts, and mathematics annually to every student in grades 3 through 8 and in one or more years as determined by the commissioner in grades 9 through 12. And that's the change that we're proposing. This is Member Thompson. I have one question.
Hey, go ahead.
To Margaret McKinnon, on the agenda item, I'm just not tracking on one thing, and it's what is this thing called?
Cover memo.
The cover memo, on the page 2 of the cover memo, the top bullet talks about something happening in 2016? And I'm just not tracking.
Oh, I'm just not. You're tracking. On the back page of the cover. Okay.
Yeah.
So, I'll walk you through the cover memo. I'm sorry. So the first item on the cover memo relates to the years that students would test.
Right.
And then the second section talks about the score ranges that were just established for the PEAKS assessment in ELA and math. And then the third section talks about the Alaska alternate assessment that's taken by students with severe cognitive disabilities. And we are taking the dynamic learning math assessment, which would have been taken for the first time in 2016, but that test was canceled, so we did not have any data. However, the other states that participate in that assessment were part of the standard setting process for those cut scores, and that did happen in June of 2016. We didn't adopt the changes yet because we had no test data from last year. So it will apply to this year's test data. Thank you.
And this is Member Harmon. I have a couple questions.
Okay, go ahead.
Yep. And these really have to deal with the public comment questions. It was, of course, we didn't have any public comment this morning, and all the public comment we've received has been very positive about these regulations. But the first question, I know the Anchorage School District submitted comments related to recommending that for high school, ninth grade be the grade we test, and I know we're leaving it to the commissioner. But what are the current thoughts on whether it's going to be ninth or tenth or which grade it's going to be?
Member Harmon, my inclination is ninth grade. I mean, that's the direction we're headed, is that we will be assessing in ninth grade.
Thank you. And again, I just wanted to follow up because I know that's something I'm sure they would be interested in hearing if they're listening to this meeting or either afterwards. And then I know Fairbanks submitted two comments. One of theirs was moving from grade level standards to content standards. And I know that's a little bit different, but and they use the geometry and algebra as an example. And I wasn't sure what the thought process was on that, as well as the second comment that the Fairbanks School District, the North Star Borough up there, had mentioned relating to the formula reference sheets available and whether or not that was a possibility related to these assessments.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not prepared to give a lengthy answer about that comment. And this maybe ties to your previous question more, but, you know, as I've said before, we're looking, and it's in the ESSA plan, we're looking at end-of-course assessments. So
right.
I think that may apply to both those questions. Do you want to add anything, Margaret?
Yes. Member Harmon, this is Margaret McKinnon again for the record. So the idea, we haven't completely made the decision, but Commissioner Johnson indicated ninth grade may be the way we go for the future for 2018 in order to give us time to, and I will say that for ELA and mathematics, in order to give us time to make a transition to end of course tests. Science, I believe, will have to wait till the process of changing the standards and deciding what standards we want and what grades to assess. But in your question about Fairbanks, I think her recommendation in moving from grade level standards in math to content level standards, the mathematics content standards in high school are strand, not grade level specific. So there's an algebra strand, there's a geometry strand. And if we move to end of course assessments, that will align with that comment. You'll say this is the content we will be testing in this course. And her recommendation for having a formula reference sheet available, that actually is already in place for high school.
Okay, good.
The recommendations there were really about how we deliver the test, not specific to the regulation.
Okay. Great, thank you. And then the last one, and I know Matt, Sue, and it was, I think, Marnie and Don, all of them had just, and this is more of a comment than, a question, just because I know, like you said, I always appreciate when people take time and effort to submit comments and think that we should consider them. I know the department does. I know you folks look at them. but I know they all reference the SAT and PSAT as the high school assessment. And again, that's just sort of a comment out there, as well as, and I know Matt Sue had actually an interesting question. I think we've talked about the science, but the last point they had made was something that, you know, the opportunity to link maps to peaks. And I'm not sure if that's something that can be done at the state level, or really there's, I know, only a handful of districts, or maybe there's more than that use the maps, but that may be something that's done more at the district level. But I didn't know if you had any thoughts or comments on those final public comments, just to the extent that any of those folks are listening and wondering, you know, how their comments are being received.
Well, I mean, like you said, we review and read all the comments. We appreciate them. They inform our work. And, you know, that would apply to all the comments we received regarding these regulations so far.
Great. Thank you.
Okay, any other comments, questions from board members? Okay, I don't hear any more, so we're ahead of schedule. If there isn't any objection, I think we can just roll right into the business meeting. Any objection, or anybody need to take a quick break?
Keep going.
Okay, we're going to keep going. We're going to go into the business meeting, and agenda item 3, regulations to adopt 3A cut scores, peaks, and dynamic learning maps. Commissioner?
The board is being asked to adopt regulations related to assessments and achievement level scores on the performance evaluation for Alaska Schools assessment in English, Language Arts, and Math, and for the alternative assessments in science.
This is Member Hull. After considering all public comment, I move the State Board of Education and Early Development adopt proposed amendments to 4AAC 06.737 standards-based test, 4AAC 06.739 assessment achievement level scores, and 4AAC 06.775 statewide assessment program for students with disabilities.
Member Harmon seconds.
Okay, it's moved and seconded. Any discussion?
And this is Member Harmon. I guess I'd just like to say, you know, we did put this out there for public comments. There was no opposition to any of these that I saw. Please correct me if I'm wrong, someone, but there was no opposition to these regulations, proposed regulation changes, and where we're setting things. And likewise, there was a number of the districts supported these efforts. So at least I'm going to be voting in favor of it.
Okay, thank you. Any other discussion? Hearing none, roll call, please.
Member Michael? Colonel Toole?
Yes.
Member Gallahorn is excused. Dr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Second Vice Chair Harmon?
Yes.
Member Hemshoot?
Yes.
First Vice Chair Hull?
Yes.
Member Thompson?
Yes.
And Chair Fields?
Yes. Does anyone wish to change his or her vote? Hearing none?
Mr. Chair, the motion passes.
Okay, thank you. And the last item we have there is board comments, so I'll just go ahead and just go through the board members by names, and if you have a comment, great. If not, you can pass. Board Member Thompson.
The only comment I have is to repeat what's been said about the work of the department staff on this plan. It's a hard process, and I'm aware of that, and they're making it look simple. But I know it's not, so I thank them all.
Thank you. Member Hemshoot?
No comments, thanks.
Okay, thank you. Member Hamilton?
No comments, kudos to the staff.
Okay, Member Harmon?
Yep, and I'll just reiterate, I think, what was already said and how everybody feels, but I do appreciate all the hard work of the department and the public. I know between, you know, the ESSA plan and the Alaska Challenge, we have a lot of public members involved, and again, I also want to thank them for their time and commitment in helping to make a difference in education in Alaska.
Okay, thank you. Member Hull?
No comment, just again, thanks to everybody. This is a lot of work, and we just, you know, spend an hour meeting and quickly approve it, but for those of you that have been doing all the hard labor, we're really appreciative.
Okay, thank you. Lieutenant Colonel Toole?
I think John and Sue both nailed it with their comments. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. And I'd just like to welcome Lieutenant Colonel Van Meter and look forward to meeting you and wish Lieutenant Colonel Toole the best. I know you're going to try to plan on being at the next meeting so we can say goodbye face-to-face, but just wanted to say welcome to Lieutenant Colonel Van Meter and thanks for everything you've given to the board, Lieutenant Colonel Toole. You've got good insight and just good comments, so just thank you for that, and thank you for all the staff, all the work that you've done. Like the members have already said, you guys put a lot of work in, and we just go through it in an hour and move on, but just thanks for all your hard work and just the amount of effort you're putting into the public and making sure all of their input is included in this and being very transparent. So with that, without objection, we will adjourn at 10:31. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.